Hey everybody, welcome back into the program. Say hello with me to Michael Rosedale. He is Bonner County Clerk. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, we have lots of questions for you. And the first one I want to get to is that Proposition 1 is not going to be on the ballot. So give our listeners an idea of how that happened.
So apparently Proposition 1 was trying to affect something that the existing law had, but the legislature and the governor changed things so that it became sort of a moot point. It changed the whole purpose of the signature drives and petitions, and so now it's not really addressed anymore.
You know, you just have such a gracious way of saying that. From my point of view, I've been disenfranchised. There was a big Proposition 1. It was going to raise almost, actually in that iteration, over half $1 billion that would go directly into only public education, nothing to parents. And I think there was getting some static against that. At least that's what I was picking up, because there were some tax issues. And so I just think they took it out of the voters' hands, they being the governor and his cronies. And he called a special session. And listen, everybody, this is me talking, not Mike. He's neutral on these issues as our Bonner County Clerk. But it was a slam dunk. I mean, they just went down, they voted it in, and then it went to the Senate, and he signed it, and they were all home for a weekend barbecue. It was just like, oh, let's do this. So there had to be some behind the scenes shenanigans. Negotiations going on. So Prop 1, ladies and gentlemen, is off the ballot. You don't get to vote, but they have allowed us to have an advisory question that's on the ballot. Now, that's related. What is the advisory question that is on the ballot, Mike?
Well, the advisory question is, first of all, an advisory question is just that. It's advisory, so we all get to vote on what we think about the question. And they don't have to take it or as we suggest. They can use that basically to get information on what the voters think or how they feel, but they don't have to actually act the way we suggest. This one is to spend basically $500 million giving it back to the Idaho taxpayers in several different ways. In income taxes cuts by $150 million, and then also education. So that's the two basic areas of that.
Okay, so another way to say that is they're giving us back income tax, some relief, which is a good thing, but what everybody really wants for the average Idahoan is grocery tax relief and property tax relief, and they're giving us income tax relief. Okay, fine. But that's first on the advisory, and then after that, they're taking $410 million. That's almost $500 million. And again, I mean, these are like separate issues, and they've married them together, and they are asking us what we think about that, sending it directly to public education and no other education format. Yes.
So that's one interesting thing about our legislature and the way we make laws is they group things together so you can't vote clearly on one thing. They always package it so that it's very vague. You have to vote for things you like and don't like at the same time. And I think that is a flaw in our system.
Definitely. Because you may say, yeah, I definitely want income tax relief, but we spend over 60% of our Idaho budget on education. And I'm going to take a little rabbit trail here right now because I was just researching this. And Idaho always comes in, we're like third from last on per student spending. But that's comparing us to New York and Connecticut. They are so wealthy. You know the percentage they spend on their education budgets compared to their total budget? It's somewhere between 20 to 30%. The national average, all states, is like 46%. Idaho is 62%. We just don't have that much money. And we spend 62% of it on education. So I don't want to hear like, oh, we're last. Well, we just don't have that much. We have a more limited budget. So anyway, it's upsetting. I do feel like I've been disenfranchised, and it irritates me, as you can probably tell. Mike is being very neutral here.
You should go into politics, Barbara. You Definitely feel strongly.
No way. All right. So there's an AQ, an advisory question on this issue. The legislature doesn't have to do or say or agree with us, but they're asking our opinion. The next thing is a serious one, also serious. It's a constitutional amendment that we get to vote on. What's that all about?
Well, basically, right now, the governor has to call the legislature into a special session if they're out of their regular session. And many states, if not most states, have the ability for the legislature to call themselves in. And this would allow our legislature to call themselves in without the governor's direct request. And so they want the ability, or they're putting out the ability, to call themselves into session if they think there's a need for it. That's the gist of it.
Yeah. And I think it's good. I'll just say again, kind of put my opinion here. They have put up some pretty high hurdles. Both the House and the Senate have to go through the process, and 60% of the members of each chamber have to consider this before they'll do it. So it's not just always calling them into session just at the drop of a hat. But there were certainly some times during COVID when the governor refused to call special sessions and was in love with executive orders, that it would have been good if the legislature could have called them into session. So this is a constitutional amendment, SJR 102, and you guys, you voters, are going to get to make up your mind on that. All right, so those are the two questions. There's another question on the ballot that's for the city of Sandpoint. Only for the residents of Sandpoint will we see this on our ballot. And what's that all about?
This is a non-property tax, so this won't affect property taxes at all. But what it is, it's a lodging tax for the city of Sandpoint. Right now, there's a 7% hotel motel room occupancy tax. And they propose to raise that to 14%. And they have a list of different projects they're going to use that for. Half the revenues will continue on the purposes that originally were done with that 1% back in 2014, which was the stadium and those kinds of things. But I believe that's what that is. But anyway, that's the gist of it. It'll raise the hotel motel occupancy tax from 7% to 14%.
So only lodging, not restaurants or gasoline or anything like that, just lodging.
On the face of the measure, that's what it says.
You know, wowza, 7% to 14%, let's not creep up on this. Let's just go for it. I haven't had a chance to research that. Is that pretty consistent with like Spokane Lodging or Coeur d'Alene?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm not for or against this. I can't say that when you go different places, there normally is a hefty lodging tax, a hotel tax to pay.
Yeah, because they have a captive audience. It's like, there you are, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you've been driving all day or whatever, you're here to see your relatives finally, and you have to check.
Right. Well, there's another reason for it too, not pro or con
again.
That is the burden on the city or the, whatever, increases when you have a big influx of people. Your property tax isn't giving you sufficient funding to supply all the needs for that. But when you have a tax like this, the more visitors you have, then you get a corresponding tax increase to help you handle that.
Well, hopefully they'll spend the money on water and traffic, better traffic and parking and the things that the tourists, create that pressure. And so this tax will relieve some of those financial pressures. All right. So you guys get to make up your mind on that. So let's talk now about what are the positions that are going to be on the ballot? Where are we making decisions? Let's do not local. It's all state and federal, right?
State, federal, and local.
Local.
It is. It's everything. Now, so this is going to be very similar to what you did back in May in the primary, except that now we actually have, so for, let's say, the Democrats chose their favorite horse. The Republicans chose their favorite horse. The Constitutional Party chose theirs. The Libertarian, their favorite. So now every one of those individually goes, head to head with each other. And that's what everybody's here for. One thing I want to say from the get-go is everybody gets the same ballot. So it doesn't matter what you're registered as, yes. Libertarian, Constitution, whatever. You get the exact same ballot.
That's because this is the general
election. This is the general election.
Back in the primary, everybody's supposed to stay in their own lane.
Right. There were so many rules for the primary is what you can do if you're registered as this or that or the other. But this, no matter what you're registered as, you get the same ballot.
You vote. So you can vote Republican or Democrat or Libertarian or write-in or whatever you feel like doing. I love it. All right.
So on a federal level, we have United States Senator and United States Representative. Those are the two races. We don't go above that. Obviously, it's not a presidential year, but we do have our senator and representative. So there's a whole list of people from each party that ran in the primaries, and that's what you get to pick from.
All right, very good. So after the federal level, what about the state level positions?
So in the state level, this is the year for the governor and lieutenant governor, secretary of state, state controller, state treasurer, attorney general, and superintendent of public instruction. So those, there were some contentious races there. If you remember the governor, there were like eight or nine people for the Republican Party. Now it's down to one. And the different people for the Democrat Party, that's down to one. So now everybody has one person representing a party in this race.
But there are other parties that are represented.
There are. There's the constitutional, libertarian, and an independent for the governor's race.
Yeah. It's interesting to me. I want to make a side comment here because I had the privilege of interviewing Julie Ellsworth, who is the Idaho State Treasurer. And on the ballot, it shows that she's being challenged by Jill Ellsworth. But the information I have, and actually it's from several months ago, is that Jill Ellsworth has withdrawn. So why is her name still on the ballot?
It's not on the ballot. Oh. So Julie Ellsworth is the representative. The other Ellsworth was going to be as a Democrat, but she actually was substituted, and the parties can do that, actually, up until last week or just the
week
before.
This is for treasurer.
Yes, county treasurer.
Yeah.
By Deborah Silver, who's a Democrat. So a party. So like if somebody who won the primary in May decides they don't want to actually run, that party actually also won the position. So the party then can substitute a new person for that person. And that's what happened.
Really?
Yep.
That just seems to me that ought to be against something that I don't like. You know, somebody goes to the primary, they get elected, that's who I've interviewed, by the way.
Well, that would be...
I've interviewed these people. And then all of a sudden, somebody drops out, and the party says, oh, by the way, we're really going to run this person? I don't know, there's something in there I'm not into, I don't like.
Well, that would be for Heather and Sage and Jim Woodward and whoever else to decide.
To get that taken care of in the legislative session. All right. So the current incumbent for Idaho State Treasurer is Julie Ellsworth. And she's the one that actually went through the primary and got the Republican vote, and she stayed. The other one is a Democrat.
Deborah Silver.
All right, what about our local, is that all the state? Those are all
That's
the
all
state,
the state
positions.
Yes.
Okay, and they're all up. They're just all kinds of state positions.
Right.
What about locally?
So locally, we have basically identical ballots. We are in District 1 and 2. Last election, if you remember, we had the our districts were reassigned based on the census. And we used to have a District 1 and District 7, legislative District 1 and 7. 7 disappeared, and now we have 1 and 2. So for District 1, legislative District 1, we have Scott Herndon is state senator. We have a state representative for A and B. We have the county commissioners, 2. So we have the 2nd district and 3rd district, so that would be currently held by Jeff Connolly and Dan McDonald. I won't list the names. You'll see those. And in fact, folks...
Are there multiple candidates?
No,
for those?
So I was going to say, in fact, folks, this is going to be a boring ballot. As far as that goes, because only Republicans even ran in the primary. There were no Democrats that even ran in the primary. So it's all a as far as locally.
They all had an R after their name.
Yes, that's right. So as far as locally, as far as like our local county offices, you only have a Republican to choose from. So do your best. Pick the one that most, well, you can't do your best because there's only one option.
There's only one option. But
so the commissioners.
That's the way it turns out.
Commissioners. Yeah. I'm on the ballot, the clerk of the court. There's the county treasurer, county assessor, county coroner.
You know, okay, county clerk Mike Rosedale, he's our guest today. He's on your ballot this November. Have you ever been challenged? Has anybody ever, maybe back like 150 years ago when you took this office?
Well, I'm not quite that old.
Okay.
No, but, so when I first ran 8 years ago, there was a Democrat incumbent running against me.
Okay.
But I've not been challenged on the Republican side yet. And I mean, hopefully that stays. Hopefully I can
understand.
Do a good enough job for Republicans and Democrats.
I actually had forgotten that, but now that you've reminded me, yes. All right, so very good. Well, he's on the ballot. I'm going to vote for you. I'll just say it right now.
I appreciate that.
You can, you know, mark that down. You can put that in the ballot box.
We do have something interesting after that, though. Then we get to the nonpartisan, and we have a magistrate judge up for a confirmation vote, and that is Lori Muhlenberg. So she's one of our magistrate judges, and that's a retain or don't retain vote.
What happens if there are all these votes to not retain? Then what happens?
If there are more votes to not retain than to retain, then she would be unretained.
So then there's like a special appointment that's made until the next election?
No, what would happen would be that there's a committee that actually chooses magistrate judges. It's made up of commissioners, judges, a lot of different people. And they would then select another magistrate judge. There would be temporary judges covering while that happens. But I think Lori's pretty much liked in the area. So I can't imagine that happening.
Okay, so if there were more unretains, then there would just be another appointment that would be made. And then at some point down the road, we would have a retain or an unretain on that judge.
Right, and this comes up periodically. I think it's every 4 years that this comes up for judges, so they have to do that. District court judges run a straight-out election, so they have competition. Magistrate judges don't have competition. It's you stay or you don't stay. District court judges are like my position where you can have a challenger, somebody come in and you actually, whoever gets the most votes for the position wins.
And judges, typically the magistrate judges are not political party declared.
Judges are.
Yeah,
district courts just, either.
They just are what they are. They are who they are and you vote, you don't vote.
Correct.
But they're not Republican or Democrat or Libertarian. Well, they may be, but not as a candidate.
Correct.
Yeah. And
actually, that's an interesting point because all of them basically are excluded from the primary because to vote, you have to affiliate with a party or choose a partisan ballot, and some require you to affiliate, and they're basically told not to, you know, obviously go partisan. So that's always an interesting situation.
Yes. Is this November cycle of voting, does it include magistrate judges?
Only that one.
That one. She's a magistrate.
Yes.
What about district judges?
Barbara Buchanan and Lamont Bariz ran in the primary. They were unchallenged.
Okay. I'll have to make a note to interview judges at the district level that are challenged if there are two running for the same one. I've never done that. I've never interviewed the judges.
That would be interesting.
New territory.
There you go.
I am excited about that. All right, we're up against a break. We're going to take it right now. When we come back, stay with us because we have plenty more information because we've got to get you guys registered and voting in November.
Hi, this is Jeff Gove, former PGA Tour Pro and Director of Instruction at the Idaho Club in beautiful Sand Point. I'd like to invite you out for a great golf experience on the only Jack Nicklaus signature course in Idaho. We are open to the public 7 days a week. Check us out online for tee times and rates at theidahoclub.com. Your green fee, as always, includes cart and range, and after your round, enjoy our full bar and restaurant. For more information, go to theidahoclub.com or call 208-265-0400.
If you're planning your next home do-it-yourself project, look no further than the Flooring Outlet by Carpet One. We have just what you need. Don Thomas here for Carpet One, and I'm here to tell you that no matter how big or small, whatever the product and whatever the budget, you'll find an amazing selection of in-stock and ready-to-take-home products like carpet, hardwood, tile, laminate, and waterproof flooring starting at just 89 cents per square foot. We've got area rugs big and small starting at $39, kitchen and bathroom tile for only 79 cents a square foot, engineered hardwood at a blowout price of just $1.88 a square foot, and don't forget about our beds in a box starting at just $2.19. Here at the Carpet One Flooring Outlet, we buy big so you can save big. Using our buying power of more than 1,000 stores, we can offer the best prices on products from big names like Mohawk, Shaw, and Dal Tile. So make it a point to drop by our showroom located between Safeway and Sandpoint Superdrug, where you'll find beautiful flooring for less.
Hi, this is Chad from the Easy Home Buyer, and I pay cash for houses. If you own a house and want to sell it fast at a fair price, call me at 208-877-6000. I can pay cash and close in as little as 1 week. I am a local private real estate investor, and I am here to help you. I buy multiple houses every month in any condition and any price range in the Spokane and Coeur d'Alene area. I buy inherited houses, vacant houses, behind in payment houses. I will even buy foreclosures and haunted houses. Woo! Do you own a house that is trashed and needs thousands of dollars in repairs? Great, I love buying fixer-uppers. Regardless of your situation, I understand life happens, and I would love to talk with you and see how I can help. If you want to sell fast, call me today at 208-877-6000. That's 208-877-6000.
Pick up the phone to inquire. Call the Easy Home Buyer.
Dell Technologies' semi-annual sale has arrived, and it's time to upgrade to the latest business technology. Save big on laptops and desktops with Windows 11 Pro. Plus, get amazing deals on server, storage, and cloud solutions, as well as top work accessories, including docks, monitors, and more. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL for special business offers during our semi-annual sale.
North Idaho's Radio, 1400, 1450 AM and 97.1 FM.
All right, everyone. Welcome back in. We are talking today with Bonner County Clerk Michael Rosedale. He's got all the information we need for the upcoming election in November. Let's start with how to get people registered.
Sure. So there's several ways to register. The best way would just, you can register online. The best way, though, would be to come into my office and register. There is a deadline to pre-register at my office or online, and that would be October 14th. After that, you can still vote, but you have to register and vote the same day. So you, if you want to, I would just get that business done with. That way, if there's any problems with your registration, you catch it ahead of time, or if you don't have the right documents or you don't have the right proof, you have time to fix it. So don't ever wait till the last day on anything you do. Just get it done ahead of time.
Just get it done. Why would anyone wait? So the deadline's October 14th. But this is September 13th. Let's do it today online or in the county clerk's office in the what I still call the federal building.
Yes.
At Division and Highway 2. So yeah, you can register. And what kind of ID do people have to have when they get registered?
You know, it's really funny. Before I tell you that, there's two different requirements for ID. One is to register, and another one is to vote. They should be the same, but they're not. So what you need to register is a valid ID that has your picture and your name, and then a proof of your residence, which has your name and your address.
Physical address, not that
now,
post
best
office
case,
box.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Best case scenario is it's one and the same thing, like a current Idaho driver's license or a school ID if you're over 18. But you don't always get that.
Or a current Idaho identification card,
yes,
if it's not a driver's license. That'll have the same information.
People move here from a different state with a driver's license, and they want to register to vote. And you can do that with a Washington driver's license or whatever. But you need to have some statement saying you live here, and it can be your property tax bill. It can be your electric bill, your gas bill, wherever you live. That kind of a thing. Now, to vote, it's different. You need to have a valid Idaho ID card. So it has to be a valid a driver's license. It has to be a high school card, a tribal card, your military, your concealed weapons, a passport. If you don't, let's say you move out here and you properly register because you have your Washington driver's license and you have your utility bill, then the state makes you sign an affidavit that you are who you say you are. And to me, that's nonsensical, but that's the rule. So that's basically the nutshell. So just bring your ID and those three things you have to prove. And that's the key. You can prove it if you remember these three things. You have to tie your face to your name, to your physical property, not a P.O. box, but your physical property. And if you have those three things, you can register to vote.
You know, I love this in a way. I agree that they need to be in agreement with getting us registered and the ability to vote. But it so narrows the avenue almost completely for someone voting for someone else or stuffing the ballot box or doing something that's just not kosher.
Right. Now, stuffing the ballot boxes is a whole different subject. And in our county, you can't do that because every ballot has a unique ID and you can't make copies. And the envelopes, you have to sign, and we check every single signature.
I want you to say that about 42 times between
and
now
I
and
will.
November.
I will.
Because people still are concerned because they're coming out of areas where that's not true, and they get concerned. The other thing...
And that is a big problem in other areas, no doubt, and I'm not diminishing that at all.
Huge problem
in other areas. Bonner County is extremely fortunate. We have a fantastic system, and I believe it's one of the best in the U.S.
Amen.
I'm not 100% certain, but it's at the very top of the security.
One of the things I think is confusing the people is the absentee ballot, and you're going to talk about that next, but the process you go through for an absentee ballot is so secure, even though you do put it in the mail if you want to, or you can hand deliver it, but that is totally different than a mail-in ballot where all these mail-in ballots just go flooding out in other states. Idaho does not do that.
Correct, yes. It's, the other states, they do have the mail ballot, and that is where everybody who's registered gets a ballot. Well, yeah, I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but that happens for sure. Everybody gets a ballot. In Idaho, it's different. You have to request an absentee ballot, and when you request it, you have to sign your request or do it online, and they check your driver's license against that. So we get the request with your signature, which we have to check and make sure you are actually requesting it, or the DMV coordinates and approves your request. So then we send it out to you. When we get it back, we look at that signature line by scanning the barcode right above your signature, and it pulls up your registration card with your signature. Yeah. And we have to compare those. And if they don't match and we can tell that they're not the same person, we cannot open that envelope. And every election, we have stacks of envelopes that we do not open because they are not right. Or because a husband and wife signs each other's, we still cannot open those envelopes. Even though we know what happened, we cannot open those.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, is how many of those legitimate absentee ballots come in and the person forgot to sign their name. And it's not only the wrong signature, there is no signature.
We get those a lot, too. What we do is we do our best to try to get in contact with these people and say, hey, you forgot to sign it. Come in and sign it. Show us your ID to make sure it's really you signing it, and sign it, and then we can count it. That's one more reason why, if you get an absentee ballot, fill it out and turn it in right away. That way, if something like that happens, you may not have given us your email address or your phone number. All we have is your mailing, so we have to mail you that notice saying, get in here and sign this. And it may be too late. Like, if you drop that off on election day, it's too late.
Yeah. My thing on early voting, and we'll get to that next, early voting and absentee voting, I agree that, you know, get it when you receive it, fill it out, you know, be compliant, you know, read the directions and follow the directions. However, there isn't time yet for all of the candidate forums and for interviews on the radio. It's hard for people to, unless they think they actually do know who they're going to vote for already, if there are choices, to make those choices. That was especially true in the primary that concerned me, because I had two positions where I was interviewing five candidates. The radio station gave me extra days to interview these extra candidates. And there was a lot to sort through with these people. And for the early voters and the absentee ballot early voters, they didn't get a chance, I don't know, to actually meet and get to know the candidates.
It's a tension. You do want to have all the information before you vote, but you also don't want to wait till it's too late if there's a mistake. And like I said earlier on in our conversation, don't wait till the last minute. What I would do is don't vote it immediately when you get it, but don't wait till the last week. Turn it in 10 days before it's due.
Right.
I mean, give yourself a reasonable amount of time to find out who you want to vote for, and then vote, and then just do it. Don't let it sit on the counter. Once you know who to vote for, vote it and drop it off in the mail.
Yeah, I was just going to say, get the ballot, go through it, and then start asking questions. Get together with friends or your small group and find out information and then vote. All right, we're up against another break. We are going to take that right now. When we come back, we are going to talk about early and in-person voting, but there's a lot of other information about polling, see if there are any changes in our polling locations as to where you're going to vote in November. So stick around. We'll be right back.
97.1 FM, 1400 KSPT and 1450 KBFI.
Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet has added ReadyWise Survival and Emergency Foods to their line of food and storage supplies. They also feature preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, plus ammo and knives. And, of course, Grunberg Sloss carries U.S. and world coins, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5, located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet.
Hello, this is Scott.
And Ty of Albertson Barlow Insurance Services.
We have 42 years of combined experience and are very proud to provide the Sandpoint area with quality, competitive companies and exceptional service.
For all your insurance needs, whether it's life, health, home, auto, or commercial coverage, Scott and I are available to assist you in determining what coverage meets you and your family's needs.
We are located in the old Powerhouse Building, Suite 203, so come on down and see us or check us out on the web, Albertson Barlow Insurance.
Record-breaking country music superstar, Luke Combs, live in concert. The world tour comes to Boise with special guests Riley Green, Lainey Wilson, Flatland Cavalry, and Brent Cobb. Albertson Stadium, Saturday, May 20th. Get tickets this Friday at 10 a.m. at lukecombs.com. Produced by AEG Presents.
First Responders Children's Foundation takes care of the children and families the brave ones leave at home. Help us help them. These are the beautiful voices of police officers, firefighters, nurses, and teenagers who remind us that we can come together and create harmony and unity. Brave to 24365 to learn how you can help your first responder community today.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM and 1450 and 1400 AM.
You know, we've always got it going on here during the commercial, and something came up that Mike Rosedale, our Bonner County clerk, was talking about. And Mike, we were talking about people not signing or signing correctly their absentee ballots or not taking care of I don't know, their registration in time. But you were saying that there are a lot of ballots that arrive late.
Right.
And they get thrown away. Tell us about that.
The deadline to have them in our office and perfectible, in other words, they're signed, everything ready to go. We want them after 8 o'clock, depending upon what order we are in with the counting that night. But we have to receive them by 8 o'clock.
No later than 8 o'clock.
After Election Day, we always receive ballots in the mail, and we always, on Election Day or before that, we get ballots that haven't been signed or that have the wrong signatures. Husband and wife have signed each other's, and there's nothing we can do about that. They do not count. We do not open them, and in fact, on your record as far as a voter registration, it shows that you did not vote because you did not submit a valid absentee ballot. We never were able to open it. So you might see down the road, if this was you, that your record shows you didn't vote, and that's in fact true because you didn't submit a signed, the signed envelope. You didn't get into us in time, and that's the problem.
And theoretically, that person could be upset and think something, you know, sneaky's going on, like, oh, no, I voted, I sent it in, I did whatever.
Every single time, yes. And every single time we get people like that.
They didn't vote.
And
so they made a mistake, or right. It was late, or whatever.
Yep, and we keep those in a big rubber band, and if anybody ever is upset about that, we can come and actually show them their unopened envelope.
Wow. How long do you hold on to those? Like until the next election cycle or, you know?
Now you're catching me off guard. I don't have at least 2 years. I mean, okay. It's a while. With the absentee, it's at least 2 years.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so there's early voting, and that starts October 24th?
No. Yes, October 24th is the early voting, and that'll run for 2 weeks through the Friday right before the election day. So you can come in, you can register and vote then. Now, the one thing when you do that is if you do register during that time, you have to vote at the same moment, and you can't take your ballots home. You can't take your ballots out. You need to vote them and bring them back. Our ballot accounting is a very sacred thing, and you really mess things up if you take your ballot. So it's actually Idaho law that you have to leave your ballot there too. So we don't want anybody to get in trouble.
Voting. If you don't know who you're going to vote for, you need to know when you walk in for early voting.
Yes.
All right, so that's October 24th that it begins.
It begins, yes.
And then 4 days later is kind of the close-off for absentee ballot registration. There's still time to get an absentee ballot, but boy, do it now.
We have to receive your request by October 28th. And again, that don't forget, we're receiving them by October 28th in the evening. We still have to input all that data into our system. Then we have to generate the envelopes. We have to, and those aren't going to go out for a day or two or three. And I'm not sure if that's a Friday or what day of the week that is. Yeah. But it could be, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 days after that they get mailed to you.
Way too tight.
Then you're, you know, it's going through the mail, the trucks, you know, the airplanes, whatever. Just don't do it. Don't wait that long.
Right. Do it now. If you think you need to vote absentee or you want to vote absentee because it's convenient for you to do that and you need to get registered for that. If you haven't already made the request because of previous elections, then do it now.
Yeah, request it online today, right now, while we're talking.
Well, we want them to listen to the rest of the show.
In 10 minutes.
Well, they could do it in 10 minutes. Go online and get it done. And here's the other thing, and this Mike taught me this, I don't know, a couple of interviews ago, and that is you have to renew your absentee ballot request every January. Like,
yes.
You know, you have to let a little time go because they party pretty hardy down there. So it's not like right away in January, but certainly by February, you can register.
Right. So if you did not yet request an absentee ballot this year,
you need
to do it right now to get one for November.
Right. And if you think you want it for 2023, come on, get online right there in February.
Next year for 2023. But yeah. For November, you have to do it
right now.
Again.
Right now. Yeah, that was a little confusing. I was telling them January.
It can be January.
Surely somebody would have
I know.
Detected the inconsistency there. We have pretty smart listeners. All right, what about polling stations? Any differences going on? Anything people need to know about?
Fortunately, no. It's exactly the same as it was in May. So everything is going to stay the same. We have, it's working out great with all the polling places. One thing I do want to say, we've had a couple polling places that just about decided not to be polling places after the primary because there's a lot of campaigning going on, that kind of thing. It wasn't electioneering because it wasn't within 100 feet, but it wasn't always in good taste either. And some of the property owners of those facilities just about told us they didn't want to ever hold elections there again. And so we are at their pleasure. So, you know, we're very grateful to everybody that provides us the location, and we don't want to lose those. It works out well for our voters. So be courteous. If you have a, you know, any kind of political anything, keep it outside 100 feet and be polite. Be neighbors.
Yeah. Be good neighbors. Yeah. But it's as long as you're 100 feet away, you can express, you can have free speech, but just keep it pleasant.
That also applies to exit polls. We've had a lot of questions about exit polls. If you are doing an exit poll or see somebody doing an exit poll, they too have to be outside of 100 feet.
Okay, here's a question that I don't know why they ask me because I just tell them, call Mike. But I do get asked, and I think this is from people who've maybe had a bad experience in another state. How do you ensure that the number of ballots that go out does not exceed the number of registered voters, and that those ballots are uniquely, individually dealt with?
So we never actually send out more ballots. Are you talking about absentee or on election day?
Well, kind of all the whole.
On election day, we send out more than 100% because we have people register on election day. And the worst thing that can possibly happen is for a precinct to run out of ballots because a lot of people moved there and registered.
That has happened in other states.
It's happened here, too.
Really?
It has happened here, too. So, no, we do that. Now, we always have far fewer ballots counted and returned than we have registered voters. We never have 100%. It's always less than that. Highest it ever is, you know, 70s, 80s. But it's usually, in the 30s to 40s, 50s.
A presidential cycle.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So your concern would be if we have more ballots counted than we have registered voters or than issue. But it's always the opposite. We always have far fewer ballots being returned than we go out with or that we send out absentees. For instance, if we send out 10,000 absentee ballots, we'll get about 7,000 back.
Okay. So a couple of things that you said today that were really, kind of new to my ears. First of all, if you go in for early voting, which begins October 24th, and you want to just go in and vote, that means you're going in like just like election day and you are voting right then.
It is your election day for you.
That's your election day. You get that ballot. You can't take it outside. You can't take it home. You can't, what's the thing on that show? Call your, make a phone. I guess you could make a phone call.
Sure. Actually, on that point, let me freeze you right there. Yeah. You can have whoever you want help you with your ballot. And so some people see some people helping or filling in somebody else's ballot for them. You are able to have anybody help you with your ballot, even a poll worker. You can anybody you want help you fill out your ballot. You can do. That's the law.
But so early voting, you get in, that's it. That's your day for voting. You need to know who you're going to vote for. Absentee voting is still available. It's open to register. It's open to get that absentee ballot. But boy, the time frame is getting short. So get your request in, right?
Right. And the early person voting is for 2 weeks. It starts October 24th, but it runs for 2 full weeks.
Okay.
And it's 9 to 5 at our county office. And again, if you can't make it in person and you don't want to be here or you can't be here on November 8th, get the absentee ballot.
Right. And or you can just do it the old-fashioned way. You can wait till Tuesday, November the 8th.
It's sort of fun.
You can go vote. You can get the sticker that says I voted. You can get a cookie depending on the polling station you're going to.
I recommend that. It is actually a really good thing to do. Yeah, and you'll meet your neighbors. You'll meet the people in your precinct.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them, anyway.
And the other thing I want to say is the people that are at the polling stations on election day are just amazing. They are informed. They're pleasant. They stay cool. They know their business. They know what they're doing. And I've seen this for many years and in different situations. And they are the best. They are well-trained. And that's up to you and your team, making them just the best poll workers ever.
Well, thank you. I love hearing that. It's actually a hard job. It's a really hard job. They do it two or three times a year, and there's so much to know. But thank you for saying that.
All right. Well, that's the program for today. Thanks again to Michael Rosedale, who is our Bonner County clerk, and to all your team, as I was saying, and volunteers. You always have the answers and the details that we need. Next week, we are going to return to the East Bonner County Library with Frank Foderaro. I think I'm saying his last name correctly. Frank and I will be talking about some really interesting programs at the library that I think you'll be interested in, lifelong learning, tutoring programs, which includes technology tutoring, which I'm going to sign up for. So we have a lot of information for you before we get into the politics that's coming your way. So until then, this is Barbara saying, please take care and may God richly bless you, my friends.